Thanks for listening to the Mornings with Carmen LaBurge podcast, made available thanks to support from listeners just like you.
Your daily encouragement that God has the world in the hollow of his hand. This is Mornings with Carmen LaBurge on Faith Radio. If we're gonna fly, we fly like eagles. Arms out wide. If we're gonna fear, we fear no evil. We will rise. By your power, we will go. By your spirit, we are bold. If we're gonna stand, we stand as giants. If we're gonna walk, we walk as lions.
He's got the whole world in his hands. Today's going to be one of those days that I am going to invite you to cup your hands together and imagine God holding the whole world in the very palm of his hand. Because there's a lot going on out there in the world, and there's a lot going on in the world right around you that may feel as if it's out of control. God's got you, and God's got this. Whatever this is, God's got it, because God has you in the very palm of his hands. I'm Carmen LaBurge, listening to Mornings with Carmen here on the Faith Radio Network. I want to lead off with a question. Does anybody know anybody that lives in Rock Valley, Iowa? Do you know somebody that lives in Rock Valley, Iowa? Not only do I want you to reach out to them, I'd love for you to just text us. We'd like to know that. That entire town is underwater, and we want to be lifting up those individuals and those folks in prayer, and we want to be reaching out. So if you know somebody in Rock Valley, Iowa, we'd like to know who that is. You could text us, 877-933-2484. I want to invite you to be directing your prayers today to people halfway around the world. There are two cities in Russia's Northern Caucasus region where both a synagogue and two Orthodox churches were targeted over the weekend by Islamist extremists. People were killed. The Russian Interior Ministry said in a statement that six police officers had been killed in two shootings, 12 more injured. Islamist involved individuals attacked not the synagogue and a couple of churches. And in the midst of all of that, Russian Orthodox priest was beheaded. I think we tend to imagine that Islamist extremism only exists in certain places in the world. And I think that we also tend to imagine that, you know, if a country is doing something contrary to the support of the world, let's say in this case, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, that there's nothing worth talking about in the rest of that whole country. But in this case, our brothers and sisters in Christ in Russia are under attack. And the issues... the issues of religious conversation, those lines run across every international border. And there's always a theological conversation to be had just beneath whatever the headline is. And so that's soil that we want to till in our conversations as Christians today. There continue to be anti-Israel protests across the country. Over the weekend, anti-Israel protesters targeted Jewish synagogues in Los Angeles, and people were physically attacked. And I think that when we get to the place where it escalates beyond words, we have to talk about it out loud. I don't like it when people are yelling nasty things at each other. I don't like it when it's a sin in words only. But when it escalates to physical violence, when it goes beyond free speech to physical attack, it is time for us to not just take note, but us to actually take some kind of action. Because this is literally how it begins. The Holocaust did not begin with millions of people dying in camps and exterminated in ovens. It's not how it started. It started with words. And then it started with pushing and shoving. And then it escalated into you had to publicly identify yourself and being called out in public and your stores being ransacked. And then ultimately you being pushed from your home. So it's time to wake up. If you've been asleep to the anti-Semitism that is growing in the United States of America, it is time to wake up. It's time to wake up. So these anti-Israel protests targeting Jewish synagogues in L.A. over the weekend, and then in Brooklyn, so in, you know, from California to New York here, we got this going on. Jewish parents were assaulted, physically assaulted, at an elementary school graduation in Brooklyn. This is a week ago now. And they were assaulted by an Arabic-speaking family. And initially, the police did not classify this assault as a hate crime. It is now being investigated as such. But you cannot sucker punch somebody, pull their hair, throw them to the ground, and tell them you're going to kill them because they are Jewish, and that not be classified as a hate crime in the United States of America. Say whatever you want. But that cannot cross a line into not only physical intimidation, but in this case, physical attack. And in case you thought that, well, it is only people exercised over what's happening in the Middle East who are wreaking havoc across the country. No, climate protesters rushed the 18th hole of the PGA tournament in Connecticut. Like, it's not just words anymore. People are taking sometimes strange action. In this case, you know, they're concerned that there should be no golf on a dead planet. And in case you thought, okay, well, it's just Israel-Palestine that people are exercised about or climate. No. The Independent Women's Forum, which the Independent Women's Forum, by the way, is they advocate for women playing women's sports. That's their advocacy. That's what they're all about. The Independent Women's Forum thinks that women should be playing women's sports. So they talk about Our Body, Our Sports, Take Back Title IX. They have a bus tour going on. And they were vandalized by people who think that people other than women should be competing in women's sports. And they vandalized the bus and prevented them from being able to continue. So there's a lot going on in terms of hostile behavior, one person toward another in the United States of America. And sometimes it is, it's small scale, this one couple attacking this other family at a Brooklyn elementary school graduation. Sometimes it's organized, the climate protesters rushing the 18th hole at the PGA tournament in Connecticut, or these anti-women radicals, you know, seeking to vandalize the Independent Women's Forum bus tour. And sometimes it rises to the level of terrorism, and that would be the case that we described out of Russia. Joining us to talk about the hostility, the rage being exercised in our communities, both here in the United States and globally. Elizabeth Newman is going to join us next. She's a security analyst. She's a former agent in the Homeland Security Division here in the United States of America. And she has written a book called Kingdom of Rage. And we've talked about that on occasion. We're going to unpack that a little bit more today. But she's going to help us understand the new developments globally and the shifting landscape of what we call the axis of evil. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Elizabeth Newman is joining us now to talk about new developments globally and here in the United States. There is a shifting landscape in terms of what we experience in hostility one to another. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here again.
Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning. I mean, whether or not it's, like Russia and North Korea, and Iran and China that we need to be worried about, or whether or not it's just rising tensions here in the United States. Can you just maybe tell us what you see, what you're taking note of in terms of the shifting landscape around us?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The Russia-North Korea thing, the first thing that came to mind is like, oh, okay, we're going back to the Cold War. And for most that remember their high school history, there was a block of countries that aligned with the Soviet Union and a block of countries that aligned with the West. And certainly the war in Ukraine really started to solidify some of those blocks again. But at the point at which you see Russia going beyond Europe and they're reaching out to North Korea, which, you know, historically, I mean, North Korea is a really small country. They economically aren't very powerful. Like they're the kind of world player that Russia's just kind of ignored historically because they just don't have much to offer them. The fact that you have Putin showing up it tells you two things. One, you know, Russia's struggling a bit with all of these sanctions that have been put in place because of his bad actions towards Ukraine. But also, you know, we know his intentions here. He is trying to rebuild a Russian empire, not a Soviet Union, but in his vision of the world, there should be a great Russian empire. And part of being a great Russian empire is, you know, kind of shoring up all of your bases. And the engagement with North Korea, it definitely starts to feel a lot like the Cold War blocks where we saw the Soviet Union, you know, playing in South America and playing in Asia. And the war in Vietnam was basically a, you know, a proxy war between the Soviet Union and the United States. And it feels like that again. I don't know that that's, I'm not suggesting that we're actually headed towards some sort of proxy war in Asia, but it's not a great sign. It feels like he's moving backwards. And I think that ties to where we are today, brought more broadly with hostility. If you buy some of the arguments that we hear from historians and sociologists, they explain that we are in the middle of an epic shift, E-P-O-C-H, epic shift, meaning there was a way the world has operated really since World War II, post-World War II. And we are transitioning out of that world into something new that is yet to be determined. And we're in this gray zone, a liminal place where we don't exactly know what's coming. We see certain elements of it that are probably what's going to be part of the new age. But when you are in those kind of shifts, there's lots of chaos. There's lots of uncertainty. And there's a lot of looking backwards and trying to cling to the past. So I see that in Putin, trying to cling to the past of a Russian empire or a Soviet Union bloc. I see that also in our present day with various factions in our country desperately trying to get attention for their cause and being willing to throw civility out the window and engage in a whole set of hostile actions, including criminal actions.
Elizabeth, it feels as if you know there's a temperature rising in the world, but it could just be my perspective. And so, when we come back from a very very brief break, I would like for you to dig with us into chapter 7 of your book. For those of you listening, Kingdom of Rage: The Rise of Christian Extremism and the Path Back to Peace. In chapter 7, you help us sort of like see the stories that shape us, who we think we are and how we think about the world. So I want to talk about my perception of reality because of the narrative that shapes me. And this helped me see that other narratives are shaping how other people see things. Could we talk about that next?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So we're talking with Elizabeth Newman. Among other things, she is the author of Kingdom of Rage, The Rise of Christian Extremism, and The Path Back to Peace. What are the stories that have shaped you? Like the stories that shape how you think about yourself, the world, and everybody else in it. Because not everybody is operating out of the same storyline. There are narratives that shape us. What narratives shape you, and what narratives shape others. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Hey, I really like it that you listen whenever you want, wherever you are, at all times of the day and night. That is so cool. So thank you so very much for all the ways in which you support this ministry with your prayers and words of encouragement. Right now, in order for this podcast to be available everywhere all the time for everyone, I actually need your help. Could you support this podcast right now so that more people in more places at every hour of every day could hear about Jesus and grow in their relationship with him? Click the link in the show notes or give now at myfaithradio.com. And thank you so much again for listening to this podcast. What's the story of your life? And what's the story of the world and the history of it? What's the story of your family? What's the story of the nation you live in? What are the narratives that shape you and how you think about not only yourself, but the world and everyone else in it? We are all creatures of story. There are meta narratives out there that we that have shaped us and that absolutely inform how we behave. And so we're talking with Elizabeth Newman. She is the author of Kingdom of Rage, and chapter 7 is about this, like the stories that shape us. So can we start there, Elizabeth? Like, when you talk about narrative and you talk about the narratives that shape us, can you read us in on that?
Certainly. The narratives in the counterterrorism world that I come from, we often call ideology, right? We look at what's the story that a terrorist group tells itself that gives itself the moral justification for violence. And we spent a ton of time focusing on very particular ideologies, right? Especially post 9/11, the Muslim community, we were very focused on like a certain sect that came up with the justification for terrorism. And what we came to find after, I don't know, 10, 15 years, is that like it actually wasn't the ideology that was the underlying driver behind why people moved towards extremism. It turns out it's these other underlying psychosocial needs, which we all have. And the core ones were the need for significance, the need for belonging, and kind of tied in there is the need for security. And so what I try to do in the book is help us understand that we all have those needs. Like, those are God-given needs, right? Like our need for significance and our need for belonging, that's a part of our imago Dei, part of the way God created us, because we are made in the image of God. That is where our significance comes from, because we belong to him. That is where our belonging comes from, right? Like, these are needs that help bring us to the Lord. But when they are not rightly met, when they are filled with false things, things that can't actually meet those needs, but they pretend to, we can end up with disordered loves. We can end up with, sicknesses, and including becoming susceptible to certain narratives that may just like that create that justification for hostile action. And I think when we view narratives that way, you can one, see like the narrative that we Christians believe, meta-narrative, I suppose it would be, or the master narrative, is one of there is a God and he loves us and there is sin and he sent his son to address and redeem not only us, but the world to and reconcile us to him. And we are living out this master narrative and that is so much bigger than us. It's not just about us. All the way to Revelation, we see God wins, right? And so there's this big master narrative that a Christian should believe, or another way to think about this is a worldview. And then, unfortunately, for many of us, including myself, if we don't wake up every day and renew our mind about what do we really believe and how am I going to actually live that out, it becomes really easy to be persuaded by our culture's narratives. And our culture's narratives are increasingly contradictory to a Christian narrative. Like, one of the ones that I dive into in the book is the myth of owning yourself, the myth that you don't need anybody. And the statistics back this up. We are increasingly a significantly lonely society. And this myth of owning yourself and comes with it this responsibility to find yourself, this responsibility to find your significance. And it's like an impossible burden to meet. And if you're interested in diving into that at all, Alan Noble's book, You Are Not Your Own, unpacks this. It is so powerful and I think really draws attention to one of our core cultural narratives that is creating the weaknesses that allow opportunities for extremism to flourish. In particular, I think what we're seeing with the campus protests, I think what we're seeing attacks, on multiple fronts, all of the stories that you were sharing, Carmen, about what had happened over the weekend, that, you know, that's just not this weekend. That is kind of the norm right now. And it's not how it used to be. We can actually see that statistically. 10 years ago, if you go back to 2014, we were, our baseline of hostile action, our baseline of crime, our baseline of domestic terrorism attacks, not just domestic terrorism attacks, just terrorism attacks and mass attacks was significantly lower. And starting in 2015, there was a doubling in 7 years of mass attacks. There was a pretty significant upward trajectory of terrorism attacks. And a lot of that, I think, and this part is harder to tie to data yet, but a lot of that, I think, is tied to the rise of social media and us being on our phones, because we started getting exposed to all sorts of narratives that started to suggest things that, one, are not necessarily healthy, definitely are not biblical, but some of those narratives, some of those connections were making it possible for people to quickly come together and kind of create group or mass, what's the word I'm looking for? We see this in cancel culture, right? We see this in this moments like the campus protests where people come together and then all of a sudden are almost taken over by the mass as opposed to their individual thinking.
And yeah, like a group think effect.
Yes,
like we
exactly.
Do things when we're a part of a group that's moving in a direction. And we would not, if you were able to call us out from the group, we wouldn't even be able to articulate, I mean, beyond, I don't know, it got me all jazzed up and my friend is here. Right? We wouldn't
exactly.
even be able to articulate what we were doing or why we were doing it, which we see when individuals are interviewed about why they are participating in something. They know the thing that is being chanted, but they don't even know what the chant means. So this drive, this desire to be a part of something and to feel something and to imagine that you are involved in something that is significant is driving a lot of behavior today in very dangerous and negative directions. That's what it feels like. And you've unmasked that beautifully in the book. Now, immediately, Elizabeth, some people are made to feel defensive because when we say, hey, you know, that individuals who have gotten caught up in something that feels to them as if it's the first place where they've belonged, the first place where they've been heard, mm-hmm. some group of people finally screaming about the thing that concerns them most. And then we try to gently say, okay, but that's not the way of Christ. Like, mm-hmm. I realize there are a lot of people who are engaged in this, but that is not the way of Christ. And that's one of the other things you're gently trying to talk about here.
I was so moved by the fact that I could see in some of our great theologians' writings and great Christian counselors' writings about idolatry and the latest social science on, like, why do people radicalize? I could see things line up. So let me give you an example. And of course it lines up, right? Because this is God. this is not, you know, theologians are studying mankind and psychologists are also studying humans and the fact that they come to the similar conclusions just from different vantage points shouldn't surprise us because it is a reflection of how God made us. But what Tim Keller will tell you is that when you see anger triggered, when you're really kind of feeding a grievance, it's usually because some good thing, it's usually not a bad thing, it's usually a good thing has become an ultimate thing. And that ultimate thing we would call an idol, and that idol is being threatened. And so the anger shows up. And so anger is that first emotion for us that, like, if I'm getting angry, sometimes there is righteous anger, but most of our anger is maybe not that righteous. Most of our anger is because something's been threatened. And there are four what he calls root idols. We have a lot of surface idols, things that, you know, we think are the thing that we're most concerned about. But at the root of it are things like power, needing approval, needing comfort, or control. Most of us have one of those, maybe two of those are like our primary root idols. And when those get threatened, we get angry. And I think as a community, as Americans, as a Christian community, we have enjoyed a lot of comfort. We've had a lot of control in our life. We have received historically a lot of approval. It's been a good thing to be a Christian in America. And we had a lot of power. And the culture has shifted a lot. And that creates space for us to be like, whoa, what's happened? Like, this is a little scary. And for some of us in that shifting, rather than going to the Lord and saying, hey, it's a little scary. This court case was decided and I don't know what it might mean. Or, hey, my kid's school is changing the rules and they're allowing transgender students to participate in women's sports, and I don't like that. And so there's lots of very real changes happening, Carmen. Like, and they're happening really fast. So there's no excuse here that there's not a lot going on. But the answer to this is not human solutions of anger and hostile action. The answer is to turn to the Lord and seek His refuge and strength in how we walk through them.
Elizabeth, thank you so much, as always. We look forward to continuing to unpack the chapters of A Kingdom of Rage. Thank you for helping us walk during this season of life as Christians in a ever-growing, more hostile world. We appreciate it. Maybe you're thinking to yourself, how can we be better equipped? How can we be strengthened? And how can we help our kids to prepare for the questions that are going to confront them in the world? Even though those questions aren't going to come as questions, they're going to come as lived narratives by other people. Well, we actually have to know and embrace and live into and help our kids understand God's good design. So Elizabeth Urbanowitz is going to join us next from Foundation Worldview. We're going to talk about how we actually teach our kids how to have a biblical understanding of who God is and how He designed us, including sex, gender, marriage, and the family. All of that up next here on Mornings with Carmen. One of my favorite mamas out there is Elizabeth Urbanowitz. You can check out what she's working on at foundationworldview.com. When you think about kids, could be your own kids, could be your grandkids, nieces, nephews, the kids of your neighbors, the kids at your church, the kids at the elementary school down the street. What do they know about God? What's the narrative they understand about who they are, how they were made, what their purpose in the world is, what God intends for relationships, how God feels about them as a boy or a girl, how God feels about marriage and the family? Where are they going to learn? Where are they going to learn the stories, the narrative that you and I know and understand? Well, that's what Foundation Worldview's new curriculum, God's Good Design, is all about. Elizabeth, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks so much for having me on, Carmen. It's a joy to be with you.
We just had a conversation about how far this can get off the rails, like how confused people can get about the meta narrative, including, you know, who you are, your identity, who you belong to, what your body is for and about. I mean, all of those things. Like, it can get we have an endless number of examples of confusion. So talk mm-hmm. with us about proactively showing kids the truth of God's good design.
Yes. Well, I love that word that you just used, proactively, because I think so often what we do in the Christian community is we wait to be reactive. We wait until the world has already come after our children, and then we're playing damage control. Whereas Christians, this should really be just the opposite of what we're doing, because God is our author. He's our creator. He's our sustainer. And he is the one who has designed us and every aspect of the world. And so from the youngest of ages, we need to be equipping our children to understand a biblical reality-based view of who they are and the world around them. And we know that right now, one of really the hot button issues is just gender and sexuality. And this is an area in which really the world and the enemy are really coming after our children. And so at Foundation Worldview, we are encouraging parents and grandparents to start talking about the goodness of God's design with children as young as the age of 4, so that we can really build up a positive biblical theology of who they are and how God designed them and what his good plan is for them.
I was kind of excited. I don't know if that's the right word. Maybe it's irrational to imagine that we've arrived at the place where, you know, when a new baby is born, the hospital is reticent to actually, you know, put the sex right there on the little box. But I can tell you that over the weekend, we welcomed a new grandbaby into our family. Her name is Rosemary.
Oh.
And I know, 7 pounds, 7 ounces, 18 and a half inches long. It's just perfect, right? She's perfect. And I really don't know why we give the weight and the length, but that's what we do. So there you go. But right there on the little box, you know, it says she's a girl. And so I do think that from the very beginning of life, we're not ashamed to point that out and know that difference. I even those like Facebook, reels that you get on your phone that you don't even know where they come from or why you get them, but I mine now always has this like 3 or 4 year old little girl, and her dad's asking her a question and she's answering it with this like brutal honesty. And he, in one of these, is like, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And she furrows her brow and looks at him and she's like, "A lady?" I'm sure he's thinking like firefighter, veterinarian. She's like, a lady? So, I mean, like when we talk about the age of when these conversations are necessary and appropriate, this curriculum is actually for children 4 to 8. Talk with us about starting early.
Yes. So the great thing about starting early with our kids is God has given them a natural curiosity and a natural love for learning. So when we're starting to talk about the goodness of God's design as creating us as male or female with children as young as 4, it can be really, really exciting for them. You know, when we take them right to the first chapter of Genesis and take them to Genesis 1:27, which talks about, you know, God creating man in his image as male or female. And then what we can do is, because kids, when they're so young, they really need their bodies involved in learning, we can just play fun games with them to help them recognize the goodness of God's design. So one thing that we do in this curriculum is we talk with kids about what it means to be a boy or a girl and how the truth about whether we are designed as a boy or a girl is revealed in our bodies and how that's such a good thing. And then we give them examples to try to prepare them for the narrative that the world is going to give them. We give them examples of children who have girls' bodies or who have boys' bodies, and then examples of the people they're friends with, the things that they like to do, so that they get just from the earliest of ages, understanding, you know, it doesn't matter whether you like the color pink or you like the color blue. You know, it doesn't matter whether God has gifted you really musically or athletically. You know, you can be a very musical boy who honors God. You can be a very musical girl who honors God. You can be a very athletic boy who honors God, a very athletic girl who honors God. But just so that at the youngest of ages, children are understanding that they were designed as distinctly male or female, and they're going to have different likes and they're going to have different abilities boys and they're going to have different friends. And those are not the things that define whether they're a boy or they're a girl. And the wonderful thing about teaching this God-given truth to our children is it takes a huge weight off of their shoulders. That our world right now is saying, like, oh, it gives children freedom and power to be able to choose their own gender. Where actually what that does is that's really enslaving, because we're then going against our designer's design, but we're also placing this weight on children that they have to somehow go on this huge long journey of self-discovery, and not only just self-discovery, but self-invention, that they actually have to invent who they are. Where when we are grounding our kids in the biblical truth, we're taking that weight off of their shoulders and letting them know, hey, you don't have to determine who you are. That has already been determined for you, and it's good, and it's God's design, and it's beautiful, and you get to discover who this is, and you get to lean into who God has created you to be and use those gifts for his glory. So it's so exciting when we can give kids, even as young as the age of 4, just this biblical freedom of realizing your identity has already been determined, and it's a good thing, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's a valuable thing, and you get to use this to honor God with your life.
We're talking with Elizabeth Urbanowitz from Foundation Worldview. You can find not only this God's Good Design curriculum, but a ton of other resources at foundationworldview.com. I'm happy to send you the direct link. Just shoot me a text, 877-933-2484. When we come back, I'm gonna ask Elizabeth, like, how do we recognize, and then how do we help our kids reject cultural lies before they start to take root in our thinking? How do you recognize the cultural lies that are out there? And how are you resisting those taking root in your thinking? That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
All right, so you've got a pack of cards. You've heard of a pack of wolves. Maybe you have a backpack. You got a lot of packs in your life. But have you ever gotten a Faith Radio welcome pack? I mean, you might be brand new to Faith Radio, or you might just be new-ish, but either way, if you've never gotten a welcome pack, we'd like to welcome you. So text the word welcome to 877-933-2484 or visit myfaithradio.com and request your very own welcome pack today.
How do you see things? How do you see yourself? How do you see the world? How do you recognize when someone is telling you the truth, or when the culture, even though it's repeating it often, is telling you a lie? And then how do you reject the cultural lies before they take root in your thinking? We're talking with Elizabeth Urbanowitz from Foundation Worldview. You can find their resources for helping you as a parent or a grandparent, a Sunday school teacher, a neighbor, a friend, how you can engage with children, not only on God's Good Design, which is the curriculum we're talking about today, but on other topics as well. I love the Careful Thinking curriculum that's designed for kids 10 and up to help them carefully evaluate every idea and cultivate the skills that they need to unmask the faulty ideas and embrace the truth. So, Elizabeth, talk with us a little bit about that topic, because I think the Careful Thinking curriculum, which is designed for kids, mm-hmm. like for those of us who never learned to think carefully, like, it's good for us too.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that we really seek to do here at Foundation Worldview is we seek to create resources that parents and grandparents can use alongside their children and also learn right alongside them. Because a lot of times, you know, we haven't learned these different things. And in the world in which we live, in 1 year of our children's lives, they're going to be confronted with more competing ideas than most humans throughout history have faced in their entire lives. And so the way in which we want to prepare our children for this world is not to let them know every single lie that they're going to encounter, because we can't possibly do that. There's just too many out there and we don't know what's coming down the pipeline. But what we want to do is we want to give them transferable skills that they can use in any and every situation that they encounter. You know, whether that's a conversation on the playground, a conversation in the classroom, a TikTok video that they see, a YouTube video, you know, something on Disney Plus, we want to prepare them with skills. And so one of these skills is, first, we just want to equip them with the question, you know, what did I just hear? And is it true? or is it not true? So that anytime they run into a meme or they have a conversation or they hear an idea, they're asking themselves what they heard and whether or not it's true. Then we want to equip them to ask questions like, you know, was there any mistakes in this person's thinking? You know, what evidence does this person have for the claim that they just made? And when we equip our children with these basic skills that they can then carry with them into any and every situation, they're going to be prepared to face the countless lies and twisted ideas that they're going to encounter, you know, this year, next year, and every year into the future.
If we just pause to ask the question after somebody says something, or after we read something on a plaque or a billboard, or we hear something in a TikTok video, or we see a meme, and we just pause long enough to ask, is it true? We've got to have a foundation of truth if we're going to answer that question accurately. So, I mean, there's a reason that Foundation Worldview has the word foundation in it. Can you mm-hmm. talk with us about the importance of the foundation?
Yes. You know, if we do not have a solid foundation in a building, no matter how amazing that building is, it is going to crumble eventually. And so it's similar with our children, that if we do not have a solid foundation for understanding what truth is, for understanding how we seek out truth, everything else we're building on top is going to crumble. And an example that I give is a lot of times, you know, people within the church, whether it's parents or church leaders or Christian educators, they have children immersed in scripture, which is so important. We need our children immersed in scripture. But a lot of times we haven't laid the foundation for them to understand what truth is and why it is that we can trust the Bible. Just recently, I had a conversation with a friend who has several teenage sons, and she was telling me about all the great discipleship activities that her sons were involved in, the different Bible studies, the things they were doing at home. And I was just praising her and saying, I am so grateful that you are so intentional at discipling your sons. I said, but here's one thing. I was like, I want to encourage you to go home and ask them the question, is the truth true for everyone, or does it change from person to person? And so she went home and she actually took up that challenge. And she first talked to her oldest son, who was very spiritually mature, you know, just a great, great kid. And she asked him that question and she said, is the truth true for everyone or does it change from person to person? And he said, well, if we're talking about something like science, then yes, the truth is true for everyone. You know, gravity applies to everyone. And she said she breathed a sigh of relief. But then he said, but if we're talking about something like religion, then no, the truth is not true for everyone. He's like, you know, the Bible's true for me because I'm a Christian, but for my Muslim friends, it's not true. Or for my atheist friends, it's not true. And so she realized then that there was this main problem in the foundation that she was building upon. And so we need to make sure that our children understand that truth is what is real. And that while feelings might change from person to person, the truth remains true for everyone. So when Jesus claims that he is the way, the truth, and the life, that he is the true representation of God and the only way to the Father, that he is making a claim that he is claiming is true. And that's either true or false. It's not true for some people and not true for other people. It's either true for everyone or it's not true for anyone. So we need to make sure that we're building on this solid foundation, because if we are immersing our kids in scripture, but never taking the time to help them understand that the Bible is true and that it makes claims that are either true or false, and that we have good reason for believing are true, then we are building on a cracked and faulty foundation.
Some of you are wondering how long is this God's Good Design curriculum? It's 3 units. And so if I can do my math, 8 and 11 is 19 and 11 is 20. I don't know. I'm so bad at this. Is that like 30 weeks?
It's 30 like total lessons.
Bad at math, good at Jesus. All right, it's 30 total lessons. So you could do it over the course of a year. You could do it in some other kind of way or formula. Here's a thought for you. If you're thinking to yourself, you know, I've got a lot of teenagers who don't necessarily have a lot to do this summer, and we hadn't really thought about how we were going to re-engage them. What if you had them come alongside you and together you did this God's Good Design curriculum or a portion of it with some younger kids who you know? Because those teenagers are going to have are going to connect more easily with those younger kids, and those teenagers are going to learn something in the process of engaging with little kids on these topics. So have some fun with it. In fact, make it fun, because nobody wants this to be a dirge or boring. God is not boring, and God does not want kids to be bored with his word or with him. And so check out what they've got over at foundationworldview.com. It's not boring. It's absolutely theologically legit. And Elizabeth, as you have already experienced, is very, very engaging. So today we've been talking about God's good design. It's a curriculum designed for you to work with kids ages 4 to 8, maybe, to help them build a biblical understanding of how God designed them, sex, gender, marriage, and the family. But there's a ton of other great stuff at foundationworldview.com. I don't want you to miss any of it, including one of my favorite free downloadable resources. There are the children's sermon note pages. They're designed for kids of various ages, so check that out in the resource section as well. Elizabeth, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on today, Carmen.
Yeah, it's a total joy. All right, what are you teaching by what you're saying, by where you're going, by how you're living, even by what you're wearing? God's got some questions for each one of us today. I drew these from Genesis chapter 3. It's a good place to turn if you just want to have a conversation with God about the questions he might be asking. This is where God asks, "Where are you?" So let's just start there. Where are you in your relationship with God today? Are you hiding? Are you avoiding eye contact? Are you ghosting him? God says to you today, where are you? And then he sends Jesus to seek you out. Are you letting yourself be found today? God goes on to ask, again, this is in the Garden of Eden, and these are questions that he asked to Adam and then to Eve. Who told you you were naked? So when you think about yourself and the world and what you believe about things, what's the source of information that you're gathering? Like, what's your source of information about your identity and your status? Who told you you were naked? And then God asks, have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? Have you sinned? If so, how so? Be a good time to come forward and confess. Like, God is so faithful to forgive. Could you come out of the darkness and into the light? Yes, exposed, but naked and unashamed. Can you stand there before the Lord and confess your sins? God is faithful and just to forgive. God also asks in Genesis 3, what is this you have done? Do you have need of repenting today? I invite you to do it. Come clean. Just come before the Lord and say, God, I have sinned and I repent. God is so good, and God loves you so much. Would you draw unto him today so that he might draw unto you? You've been listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'd love for you to check out the resources we've made available just for you at myfaithradio.com. We've got a Day of Forgiveness resources posted there. Please check those out. Our Day of Forgiveness is coming up on Wednesday. I want you to be prepared for that. So check it all out at myfaithradio.com, or just text the word forgive to 877-933-2484. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. Podcasts like this are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes to give now. And thanks.